Well, we're going to be looking at our First Peter reading this morning for a lot of reasons, not least of which is because I think it's got some very interesting stuff in there that we can look at. We are not going to talk about what Jesus did when he went to preach to spirits in prison, because really nobody really knows what that's all about, and it doesn't really make a lot of difference to us because we are not spirits in prison, and what Jesus did when he spent some time between death and resurrection doesn't make a lot of difference to what we do in our day-to-day life. It doesn't mean it isn't worth speculation. It certainly doesn't mean that it's not worth study. But there's a wide range of things we can do with the Bible, and I find it kind of aggravating that people try and either elevate one above all the others, or will suggest that everybody has to do all of them. And this is sort of top of mind at the moment, because a friend of mine just got back from a multi-day conference on the meaning of the atonement, which is wonderful. We need people who enjoy that kind of thing and will bring back value to the local church and those of us who don't have those options or opportunities. As long as no one suggests that we all have to do that or have to be as interested in the subtleties of the discussion, blessings on them. We're not going to talk about that. Rather, we're going to talk about the question, goodness is rewarded, isn't it? Well, the first answer is the easy one. Yes, it is. Goodness is always rewarded. The problem is that our time frame might not be sufficient to see the reward when we want to. Goodness is ultimately rewarded in the presence of God, and I think that's something that we can depend on. But now that we have that out of the way, we're going to talk about something a little bit closer to us. That is it rewarded when we want it to, or in ways that we are expecting? I find it interesting that one of our secular proverbs is that no good deed goes unpunished. I'm sure you've all heard that one at one point or another. And it comes from this whole idea, or it comes from this question. There's this deep sense within us that goodness should be rewarded. And it is, almost all of the time. Let's not lose sight of that for the most part, when we do good things, we are noted for them. It's pointed out. The good things that we do accomplish the good things that we want them to. But why does Peter want to talk about this? Because he does bring up some other possibilities here. Right at the very beginning, who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Now, apparently the Greek construction, I was just noticing this morning, actually, in my study Bible, says that this is the least likely contingency. The Greek has got all kinds of fun things that you can do with that. But the fact that it could happen, and that Peter went out of his way to mention that you might suffer for what is right, you are blessed, suggests that goodness isn't always rewarded, or at least not the way we want it to be, or at least not when we want it to be. And this is a potential crisis for us. And it's a reasonable and a real crisis. We see this, first of all, in children, as they begin to realize that the usual cause and effect doesn't always hold when it comes to this sort of thing. The vast majority of the time, when you do what you're supposed to at school, the right things come out. When you're pleasant to people in the playground, they are pleasant back. But for everyone who's had children or been around children, the day comes when they come home from school with this horrible realization that it doesn't always work that way. And it's one of the hardest moments in a parent's life, especially in a father's life, when your child comes home and says, I was nice to this person and they were mean back. Because your initial response is not a good one, or at least mine isn't. If it happens when they're in grade one or two, you're unlikely to want to go and punch some kid. But you might want to go and be unpleasant to them, or perhaps their parents or something else, because that's an initial reaction from us as well, because we think that when you are pleasant to people, pleasantness should come back. When we treat people well, they should treat us well and those around them. When we're honest, we expect honesty in return. But sometimes it just doesn't work that way. And our first response as spiritually astute and aware people might be that it's just part of the fallen world in which we live, and it's a sign of evil in the world. And sometimes that is indeed correct. I mean, we do live in a fallen world. There is something fundamentally broken about this beautiful world in which we live and all the wonderful people around us. There's something amiss that is not solvable in an ultimate sense until Jesus returns and the world is fixed again. And we look at that, and it's very tempting for us to put all of those things into that category, that this is a sign of evil. You know, I mean, somebody cuts you off, it's not, you know, some kind of ultimate evil, but you know, we look at that and say, okay, well, the world has fallen. That's just the way it is. I will just grind my teeth and just keep going. But let's drop down to verse 17. It is better if it is God's will to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. And we're going to skip over the doing evil part because that's not what we're interested in. The bigger question to me, and what Peter's opening our eyes to, is that sometimes there's more to it than just the fallen world in which we live. Because it really can't be much clearer than that, that it might be God's will that we suffer for doing good. Well, what do we do with that? Because that takes the whole issue of the fallen world out of the picture. We're no longer dealing with the fundamental flaws. We're dealing with the essentially good God saying that there's something more than those easy responses. And what's more, it's better. Well, I don't know about you. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure about you, that you don't like suffering any more than I do. People who seek out true suffering have a mental illness, if you ask me. Unless we look at it from this perspective. And it's not so much that we seek it out. It's more that we realize that there are some things that in the goodness of God and in his ultimate sense of what needs to be done present themselves as suffering to us that are still of value. And that can actually be a good thing. This is frustrating to us. And I think it should be frustrating to us. I think it's a sign that we are aware of the fact that we were created for good things and good things only. We were created for relationships that are not characterized by dishonesty, by pain and suffering. We were created to have an ongoing, perfect relationship with our Creator. And then it went sideways in the Garden of Eden, and we've been dealing with that ever since. And we tend to think that there are two options. Either we are doing what needs to be done, and that is properly rewarded, or we're doing what needs to be done, and it isn't, and that's the fallen world. But that leaves out another very significant component. And that's God's intimate and direct and real connection with us in our suffering that sometimes is his will. We don't always know why. Sometimes in retrospect, we look back and we see that it was through suffering that we became who we are now in ways that we wouldn't trade. We perhaps will look in once again in retrospect and say, I wish it could have happened some other way, but I'm not willing to give up where I am now, even if we could take that suffering in the past away. Sometimes that seems to be the purpose behind suffering. But what is frustrating is that sometimes we never know. At least it frustrates me. There are some people who are able to hold on to the uncertainties of life in a way that I find humbling when I see it. Because they're not living in denial. They're not pretending good is bad or bad is good or anything like that. They just have this innate ability, or perhaps it's a spirit-given ability to not let that bother them the same way it bothers me. But what it does, whether we know what the answer is, what it does, whether we're one of those people or not, or you're more like me who always wants answers because, well, that's just what happens. I wake up in the morning, I want answers. That's who I am, for better or for worse. But it's God's will. And when we start seriously taking God's will into account in what we do, it changes a lot of things about us. If we're lazy, what it does is it takes the responsibility from us in everything. We say, well, it's God's will that I was late for work. It was God's will that I didn't do this or I didn't do that. Well, that's probably not the case. An understanding of God's will and how much broader and deeper and more in every possible way it is than we can comprehend, what it can do is enable us to know that there is meaning in suffering whether we see it or not. And as a quick side note, this is all about suffering for doing good, not the suffering for doing evil. If you get a speeding ticket because you're speeding, this is not suffering, this is justice. And expecting God to somehow bring some kind of special blessing out of your suffering for getting a speeding ticket is poor thinking at best. If you get a speeding ticket you don't deserve, and I suppose that's possible, well, that's a different thing altogether, but for the most part, the tickets and such of our lives are things we richly deserve, and let's be honest, we get far fewer than we should get. We're not talking about justice. We're not even talking about human justice, which doesn't always get it right. What Peter's talking about, and what he's helping us realize, is that just because we're doing what we should do, that just because we're doing good, it doesn't mean that we are always going to be rewarded immediately or in the way that we expect, but it also doesn't mean that we are forgotten. It doesn't mean that when we do good and it's not rewarded, when we do good and it's thrown back in our face, it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing, that we were somehow wrong. It means that sometimes the larger picture of who we are in this world and how we fit into the purposes that God has for His creation means that for us there is a period of suffering. For most of us, honestly, it's kind of trivial, most of the suffering we do. Very few of us have been actively or physically persecuted for what we believe, or very few of us have done a good deed and then been physically assaulted for it. But the suffering that we have is still meaningful. When we are mistreated in any way, we are still being mistreated. The fact that someone else is mistreated more than us doesn't mean that our treatment somehow becomes good. It means that we shouldn't try and equate them. Instead, we should look at where we are. And we should realize that suffering, our suffering, can be God's will. There are all kinds of difficulties I have with that notion that sort of, if you are a spiritually aware person and you pray the right way, you will be rich, you will be successful, all of the good things in life will be yours. And I have all kinds of problems with that. But one of the biggest ones is 1 Peter. Where does that fit in that whole idea, that so-called prosperity gospel? Suffering sometimes is God's will. And if we are somehow under the impression that we should be saved from that, we should take a look at the life of Jesus. If there is anyone who did not deserve to suffer in the whole history of the world, it was Jesus, and yet he did. Because good came from it. God's will was such that that was the requirement for our salvation. It's not unreasonable then that perhaps some of the suffering we go through is for the good of others or for the good of ourselves. It doesn't mean that we will always understand instantly why we suffer. As I said before, I wish it did. I wish there was always an answer. Sometimes we see it, Sometimes we look back and we think of that experience we went through, which at the time, honestly, we thought we were going to die in it. Most of us have had some experience in our life where when we were in the midst of it, we honestly didn't know why we were still alive. It was so painful. It was so horrible. And sometimes, over time, when we look back, we see that's where this part of me that I would not give up began. But sometimes we never see that. Sometimes we are forced, whether we want to be or not, to depend on the essential goodness of God, on His ultimate wisdom, to know that when we suffer, it is not meaningless, and that when we suffer for doing good, it has purpose. God's will is not frivolous. God's will isn't capricious. It's not just here and there, wherever it might be. God's will is purposeful. And we know the purpose. It's the redemption of His creation to Himself. But we don't always know all the details. This is frustrating to us. It's frustrating to our children or our grandchildren or the children in our lives when we say, well, we need to do these things before we can do what you want to do. And they say, well, why? Sometimes you just can't explain it. Or when you're driving for a period of time that's longer than they want to be in the car. And you say, well, we just have to drive till we get there. Well, why? Which I think is a great question. Fundamentally unanswerable, really, but it's a question I have. I usually put it in more profound or subtle terms than that, but really what it comes down to is why? Why do I have to wait for this? Well, there is no answer. I can't come up with an answer that's going to satisfy a four-year-old why it takes 3 hours to get from Regina to Saskatoon. You know, I can give her all the physics that, well, far more than she wants, and she's still not going to be happy. Sometimes we're in the same boat. Sometimes when we ask God why, He tells us. Sometimes it becomes perfectly clear that this is something that we need to go through for this purpose. But sometimes it's not. And the temptation is to give up on the goodness of God then, and it's a reasonable temptation, and it's a real temptation. But it's a temptation. It's not the proper response. Suffering can be God's will. When we do what we're called to do, and the outcome isn't necessarily what we're expecting, it's not always because we did it wrong. It's not always because the other people didn't understand. Sometimes there's bigger things at work than we can see, than we can grapple with, than we can understand. And so sometimes we'll live in this world where, yes, no good deed goes unpunished. And sometimes we'll ask ourselves, you know, goodness is rewarded, isn't it? Like the sermon title says. The ultimate answer is that yes, it is. Always. Goodness is always rewarded. It is always acknowledged. If our time frame is too small, if our context is too limited, it doesn't change the fundamental reality that God is well aware of all of those good things we do, and none of them are lost. None of them are pointless. None of them are without value. The reward that we deserve will be provided always. It's just sometimes we have to die to see it. Sometimes we have to wait a long time. But it is rewarded. And that's what we hold on to. The reality of suffering is inescapable. And the reality of suffering for doing what is good and what is right and what is noble is also inescapable. But it's never meaningless. It's always cared for. It's always rewarded in the right time. By a good God. Amen.